Surprise, surprise. So you rub your eyes. Never knew you'd a yes, so cool as eyes. Here to fight then, there was stupefy. Ducks categorizes as hard cries. That's a lie, we know why we're occupiers. No words but obscure style and these are higher. Profiles are low as soon as we go. As a breeze straight from a deeper shade of soul.
Urban Dance Squad, Deeper Shade of Soul, one of my favorite songs back in the, I think I remember it from the early 90s, but I want to say it's late 80s. They were a Dutch band. You can't hear it. I don't know if the rapper is American. I'm going to guess yes, because he does not sound Dutch. Great song. They really, during the 80s and 90s, it was really cool to do the whole rap rock thing, thanks to Aerosmith and Walk This Way. And then I think the Fat Boys and the Beach Boys. I won't play that one for you. I will save your ears the horror of the Beach Boys and the Fat Boys rap rock mix. My microphone's not working. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. I can't stand Valentine's Day. And it's not, what do you want to call it? It's not that I'm not a romantic, but it's just, I don't like being manipulated, and I feel like it's just a manipulative holiday. It's just some card company, Hallmark, telling you that it's a holiday. It's not a holiday. There's nothing holiday about it. All it is people telling you to buy crap and chocolate and all that. It's just a bullshit holiday. Never was a big fan of Valentine's, but if you are, then happy Valentine's Day to you. Today's episode of the Wait What If podcast, I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be a little bit of an apology. It's going to be me explaining something I tweeted, because I got into a little bit of a heated argument with a millennial over something silly. There was a course offered to millennials or young adults up in Maine at a college. I'll go to my Twitter. You'll find it. And it was called Adulting or something like that. And nothing drives me crazier than when people take nouns and turn them into verbs. Like, I can't adult today, or adulting. I think it was like adulting 101. It was basically teaching useless people how to, I don't know, cook, sew, do things that you're kind of supposed to know how to do, open a bank account, pay bills. And so the person who got mad at me, I was just venting how I don't like when people use nouns as verbs. But I think it's an example of a deeper problem. I don't care about your slang, all right? Every generation has their slang. That's fine. But what I don't like is this trend of people bragging about how useless they are. I can't adult today, or I don't want to. It's pathetic. And when I was telling this to this person, she just went into a tirade of F you, F this, blah, 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 blah. And she got triggered by my dislike of the term adulting. And really, like I said, it's not the slang. It's the whole point of it. So it made me think, I've always had these ideas, I guess, about millennials and some of the issues that are going on today in society. So I wrote them down, and it'll be kind of an apology and saying, okay, millennials, I get it, but this is where I stand. And it's to clarify that, because you can't clarify your thoughts on a Twitter feed. And no one cares anyways. That's the thing. Twitter is such a waste of time. It's fun. I get it. And if you're not having fun with it, if you're literally getting angry and focusing all your energy on social media, then you need to find something else to do. But the idea that you can have a conversation or whatever with 240 characters, it's just not going to happen. So that's number one. Number two, I have to kind of update what's going on with the Wait What If podcast. If you've noticed, I haven't posted in about 3 weeks. And that's not a mistake. So this is a one-man show. And I'm going to be honest with you, interview shows are difficult, especially when you do it all by yourself, because I'm not complaining. I love this. I love doing interviews. I've met some really cool people. I've made friends doing interviews. But podcasts aren't just press record and hope for the best. when you look to book big guests, you know, authors, movie makers, whatever, you end up having to read their books, watch their movies, watch their documentaries, read their blogs, write a ton of show prep. For every interview I do, so my interviews are about, I don't know, an hour, hour and 20 minutes, it's probably 10 hours of work. And that's a ton of show prep. And a lot of your favorite podcasts where people do interviews, they have a team. They have someone that writes the questions. They do show prep. I do it all myself. Again, I'm not complaining because I like this. This is my hobby. It's something I enjoy doing. The problem is I don't really have all that time. And if you don't do that, you're going to sound like an idiot and no one's going to take you seriously and your show flops after a few episodes or whatever. So I've been doing this show now for over 4 years. Or are we on five? I don't know. I think this is the fifth year. And my last few interviews were awesome. I had great guests. They had great content. They were fun. They were informative. But the workload is killing me. So what I'm planning on doing is putting the interview part of the Wait What If podcast on hold for the time being. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to have my shows with like John Taylor, Savannah Steele. What I want to do though is I want to reboot Wait What If back to the original Wait What If concept. And the idea then was that the show was based on chats that I had with friends and neighbors around a fire pit late at night where we contemplated deep things. Folks call it pot talk. We're not smoking pot, but you know what I mean? You know, we talk about death, time travel. Could a zombie apocalypse really happen? Schrodinger's cat. I mean, that was the title. Wait, what if? What if this happened? And it was great. It was a lot of fun. And I looked forward to it because I love talking things like that. People started contacting me when my show grew a little bit for interviews. So I strayed away from that content. But I think I'm ready to return. If for anything, for creative freedom that it allows me. Because when I do an interview, I have to kind of focus my attention on that person's subject. When I do a freeform show about, say, time travel, and I'm using that as an example. Obviously, we're not going to be talking about time travel all the time. But when I pick my own subject, I can just kind of use my own creativity and decide what we're going to talk about. And So I guess this all should have been done back at episode 100, but I had a lot of people booked and I really wanted to interview them. So I had a lot of fun interviewing them. So technically, this is now, we'll call it season two, episode 101, even though I think we're on episode 115 or whatever. So if you're used to the interview format, I'm sorry, but I guarantee you this format is much more fun. If you're a fan from the beginning, then you might find this refreshing, kind of to return back to the roots. So it's good news. It's more creative freedom. It's going to allow me to relax a little bit. We're going to get over to Revival 1869, have more fun, more comedy, good guests. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to cracking open my creativeness again. And yeah, I hope you're excited too. So let's get into today's episode. Oh, I have to cue my episode beginning music right now.
You're listening to the Wait What If podcast.
I have a disclaimer, okay? I'm not innocent of millennial behaviors. I was born at the very tail end of Generation X, and that's a generation with a host of their own issues, admittedly, and the beginning of the millennial era. So I have displayed my share of both generations, my traits, I guess, of both generations. I've taken selfies before I became overly self-aware of the narcissism, thinking that other people would give a flying shit about what I was doing at any given moment during the day. But I did that, yes. I think the reason we tailenders, I guess we'll call us the tailenders, meaning the tail end of the Generation X, we grew up in an age where computer technology was advancing into the commercial world every day. But it was a slow pace, right? Video games weren't much different from 1982 to 1995. When I was in college, the majority of my classmates didn't even have cell phones. And this was, I don't know, 95 to 99. But then after we graduated from college, so we'll call it the year 2000, right around then, which would have been my early 20s, tech exploded. Cell phones became available. They became cheaper. Everyone, literally between like 99 and 2003, it went from 1 in 10 people with cell phones to everyone having cell phones. And then obviously within that short amount of time, they went from being cell phones to basically pocket computers with tons of technology. So in that short period of time, we went from really nothing to just basically all the technology we could ever want. And what made us different than, say, the people who were further into the Gen X is that they were kind of already established, already with kids, maybe already established in their jobs. But as tail enders, we were still kind of kids at heart. You know, we were just finishing college. So all this social media that was coming out and texting and all that, that really grabbed us. And then the millennials at the time, they were still living with their parents. So they really didn't have it. They saw it, but they didn't have it. So what I'm getting at is we tail enders appreciated the technology. You know, millennials just kind of expected it. I think the hardest thing to overlook with this generation is the fact that they're constantly looking for validation for every action, every minute, every day of every year, whether it's Instagramming their breakfast, their workouts, their clothing, their haircuts, whatever. The monotony of their day, they are broadcasting it to the world. They have this insatiable appetite for attention. And with that is this total lack of self-awareness. They don't seem to be aware of the ridiculousness of their behaviors and what kind of destructive side effect that it can have. So as a Generation Xer who's settling nicely into middle age with millennial traits, I'd like to share a little bit of advice. I'm going to stop complaining about millennials, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to give them some advice, okay? So I'm going to give you my top, I don't know, 5 ways to, I'll use your term, to adult in the modern age. So 1, don't expect validation or sympathies for things that we expect you to do as adult members of a productive society. This is what you would call adulting, and the rest of us would call life. And I say this with a few caveats, okay? So let's take student loans, for example. I get it. I get that you feel being hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt after college feels like an unfair burden on your part. It is unfair, all right? School is twice as expensive as it was when I was a kid in the late 90s. Another thing that really blows my mind is the amount of socialists that are in the millennial group, because half the problems they're dealing with is because under Clinton and Bush, government got expanded so greatly that all our problems have stemmed from it. We were told that we needed to go to college and have that diploma, and it would make us more marketable for the workforce. Doesn't work that way. Now you want us, those of us who've already paid most of our college back, to pay your tuition back. Sorry, I know it sucks, but you have to convince a bunch of folks who already paid their way to cough up the cash to pay your way. It's not going to happen. Now think about the next generation that wants unlimited free schooling. And free just means they want schooling that you're going to pay for. Same exact thing. That feeling you have in the pit of your stomach when you think about working your ass off to repay your debt and then forking over cash to pay for the next generation's debt, that's it. That's adulting, right? Now you can say the same thing for this for everything, like when you're sick. You know how many people I see tweeting about how sick they are and they want their moms to make them soup? Get over it. You're going to get sick and it sucks. Could be being passed over for promotion, getting into a fender bender, anything that kind of sucks in your life. You have to deal with it. Deal with it. Don't share it. The big difference is that when every other generation had a shit show to face, they had no one to complain to. Now you have the entire world to complain to 24/7, 365, and this isn't healthy. 2, it's okay to fail. It's perfectly fine and perfectly healthy. And no, it doesn't reflect poorly on you. We all fail, and it's facing these failures that we learn to grow and become better people. This is totally the fault of the everyone gets a trophy phenomena, which they started again when I was a kid. The problem millennials have with failing is that they envision their lives through the eyes of social media snippets. Here's the perfect breakfast. Here's the perfect sunset. Here's the perfect wedding, the perfect job. When you have millions of people sharing these doctored images of success, it's no wonder that you gauge your own success after these fairy tales. Millennial expectations far exceed reality. And when they do succeed, it's internalized as a failure because they compare it to some made-up image off a friend in college that you would otherwise have no contact unless they decide to post their breakfast that morning. Millennial expectations far exceed reality. And when they do succeed, and it would be a success in any other generation, because it's not all puppy dogs, ice cream cones, and fireworks, it's internalized as a failure. Now, I'm not saying lower your expectations, but understand what success is. Look at how your parents and your grandparents experienced success and how they celebrated it. You can learn a lot from that. Number three, this one's really important. Don't be afraid to be uncomfortable. I learned this from the book Fight Club and then the movie, right? I read it back in college, and it absolutely changed my life to this day. Comfort and protection dull the senses. Suffering and hardship prepare you more in life than anything else you could ever do. How can you know what true warmth is without experiencing true cold? How can you appreciate peace without seeing violence? How can you appreciate success without struggle? I took the best shower of my life 8 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was riding in a charity bike ride from DC up to Pennsylvania. It was 2 days long. It was like 60 miles a day. And one day we got stuck in a bitter cold rainstorm. When I say cold, it was like 35 or 40 degrees. The wind was whipping across the road at us. The rain had to be below freezing. It was freezing. The temperature plummeted. The winds were high. It was really, really, really uncomfortable. We didn't stop the ride because we were committed to it. We didn't let this suffering interfere with our goal. We faced it and we accepted it. And we didn't complain about it when it was going on. We didn't put it on Facebook and get upset that we were adulting at the time. That afternoon when I got to my hotel, I couldn't get warm. I mean, I was in the blankets and I was shivering. So I was obviously hypothermic and I couldn't get comfortable. So I heated up the shower and the bath and then I just sat in there for like 2 hours. It was the best I had ever felt. Not only did I feel accomplished in the ride and completing our goals, but the warmth triggered this internal glow that I've only experienced a few times in my life. I was so relaxed and my body was just so appreciative of this restful, warm relaxation that to this day, that was one shower slash bath 8 years ago. And to this day, I look at it and I would love to replicate that again. A lot of people avoid, by all costs, any discomfort. And I think that's a mistake. Without discomfort of late nights, of hard work, reward just doesn't feel as good. Number four. Now, I got this one from Mike Rowe. Stop following your passion. Let's say your passion is football, and you're 100% doing everything you can to be a professional football player. And then think about this. Your odds of becoming an NFL football player are about one out of every million U.S. citizens. Literally once, one in a million. So you're saying there's a chance. Yes, there is a chance, but well-placed effort is called for here. So let's say, again, you're 100%, you want to be an NFL football player. Okay, you're going to try to be that one in a million. And let's say you're 5'6", 165 pounds. You're probably not putting your effort in the right place. Even though it's your passion, even though this is the golden unicorn that you're searching for, it's probably more likely, no, it's definitely not going to happen. This is an extreme example, but it happened to me. I fell victim for this. So I have a passion for writing and storytelling. I went to college at 18 with the idea that I would study liberal arts, which I actually studied history, and I would learn all I needed to know about research and writing. And I did. I learned a ton. I got out of college and sent a ton of resumes out. I was only hired part-time. Now, I look back on this and I realize it was absolutely a opportunity. But at the time, my passion was writing, and I saw myself, I don't know, writing for the New York Times, writing for CNN. I just wanted this idyllic life that I envisioned in my head that I had planned out. But I probably wasn't good. So anyways, I was hired part-time at a Portsmouth, New Hampshire radio station, and I was announcing traffic. I was flummoxed. I worked for 4 years. I learned everything I could about research, about writing, and I was stuck. Again, in hindsight, was a great entry-level gig, but I didn't see that. I was stuck doing the traffic reports at a local radio station. I didn't end up sticking with it because it made no money and I had to be there really early. I didn't have the work ethic or the foresight to stick with something like that to grow a good writing broadcasting job. All that I figured was happening was I was being denied my passion and having a bunch of bills, so I had to take jobs I didn't like. I got fat, I got lazy, I ended up having to join the Air Force. But the path actually worked out for me because the Air Force taught me more truth than I could get in 4 years of college, and that was developing marketable skills. Marketable being the key word here. So when I graduated University of New Hampshire, it was with 10,000 other liberal art graduates, and I was mediocre at best. I think I had a 2.65 GPA. All right, so I was less than mediocre, not very marketable. Fast forward to when I was going to get out of the Air Force, I had a little bit more maturity, and I researched the top jobs expected to grow over the next 20 years. And anything in medicine was always the top three. So I decided at this point that I'm going to work my ass off for a short amount of time, 2 or 3 years. It ended up being about 2 or 3 years, not be mediocre, and be the best. Well, I ended up going to PA school, but I was going to be the best PA to graduate in 2012. Okay, that was my goal. It wasn't my passion. It was my goal. I saw an opportunity. I saw growth, and it became my goal. My passion was still writing. I write all the time, but my skill became medicine, and I was very good at it. I am very good at it, and I'm very marketable. I took a job which allowed me to be a good medical provider, first off, because that's what I trained for, but it also allowed me to be a good husband, a good father, a good friend, and it also allowed me to, are you ready? Pursue my passion, and thus you're listening to this episode of the podcast. So passions are fine. They're great. They bring you joy and color to your life, but you can't expect to follow your passion to success without building a good foundation. And number five, this one is very important. I want you to write this down. Get a pen and paper. You're not going to be famous. I know that internet fame and old school fame are very different. The internet opens up a ton of new options or possibilities for a level of fame that was unattainable 10 or 15 years ago. I think it's great that talented people have the ability to write and produce their own programming and share it with small, medium, large audiences. It doesn't matter. I love that. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I do it every day, or in this case, once every couple of weeks. Just don't take your eye off a prize hunting for this fame at the cost of your dignity. I see so many millennials posting total horseshit for the whole world to see, and they're young, and this stuff doesn't disappear. Yes, there's more opportunity for you to grow within the social media sphere of influence, and that's fine, but there are thousands and thousands and thousands of others thinking that this is going to be their key to fame, and that is a completely misplaced effort. If you want to create, great. I mean, absolutely do it. Just be humble. It's much more palatable to see someone humble on YouTube and focus all the aforementioned things, or you could be let down. You could be let down hard. See, one of the problems with millennials is that their expectations rarely match up with reality. And then they look around and they say, hey, wait a minute. I'm in an entry-level job. I'm doing traffic in a Portsmouth radio station. I'm single and I have imperfections and I'm total horseshit, and all that does is lead to an absolute depression. Instead, work on your foundation. Work on being marketable. Work on creating the world you want to live in, but shrink it down a little bit. So that's all I have to say tonight, I guess. I don't mean to be a downer. I love millennials. I really do. You guys are the helm of the 21st century, and maybe you guys will benefit from Ray Kurzweil's quest for immortality. I think I'm too old for that, but I think the 20-somethings right now, I think they're just at the age where they might live forever. Just stop annoying the rest of us with your millennial behaviors. They're a bit annoying. You're not winning any friends amongst your elders. Just say, fuck Kevin, and wait till we're all dead, and then you can take over the world and live forever. That's it for today, folks. Next week, we're going to come up with a fun topic. I'll see who I'll have come on. Again, we're probably going to stray away from the interview type shows, but we're going to get back into the root of the Wait What If podcast. And if you wonder what that, if you're a new listener, you're like, what is that all about? Well, just go back 2 years and look at the type of episodes we put out. They were fun. very creative. I just had a lot of fun with those. So we're going to try to return to that and allow me to not have to prepare for so many interviews. I hope you like it. If you don't, tweet me, say, screw you, Kevin. I want you to do interviews, and I'll do that. But at this point, we're just going to try to go back to our roots. Check us out at WWI Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Wait, I might have a Facebook account. Look up Facebook/WWI Podcast. We might be on there. And of course, the website, www.waitwhatif.com. Did you know it takes more words to say www than it would just to say World Wide Web at waitwhatif.com? So that's my bit of info for you today. Enjoy yourselves, and I will see you in 2 weeks.
Like us on facebook.com/WWI Podcast and at WWI Podcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.